Dave, sounding like he's sitting 4 meters away from us in the bathroom, brings you
Phoenix City.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix City for another week. We're sans Cam tonight. He's having a rest evening at home by himself, looking after two children.
But so not a rest evening at all. No.
The rest of us are all here. Dave, you're here. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
Dave doesn't have a microphone, so he's...
I have two microphones.
Well, you do.
The best kind of microphones.
You've got an old XY situation going on there, yeah. So Dave might sound like he's in the bathroom, but he is actually in the room with us. And Cam, you do... Sorry, you're not Cam. Jesus.
Hi, Pat.
Hi, Frosty. What's gone wrong with me?
Honestly, it started a long time ago.
I'm so sorry.
At birth.
Have I insulted you or have I insulted Cam?
That's fine.
Which way around is it?
And normally you can tell us apart by the fact that I'm not wearing a hat or sunglasses on my hat.
No beanie. Yeah. No beanie involved.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some football. Let's talk about, first of all, an announcement that Dave and I have. We mentioned on the last podcast, but at the end. I know that some listeners don't listen all the way to the end of the podcast because it gets a bit boring, which is fine. But Dave and I are doing a live show. We have our other podcast called The Worst Game of All Time, which you may have heard of, where Dave and I watch the Phoenix lose a game from the archives over and over and over. We just started season 3 of that, which is the Phoenix losing 5-0 to Melbourne Heart from 2014. Do you remember that game, Frosty?
Ugh.
You do? Mm. Very good. And so... That is our live show is coming up on March the 13th at the Griffin Theatre on Gusney Street as part of the Fringe Festival. And tickets, how much are tickets, Dave?
I think they're $12.
Are $12 because I listened to the pod this morning.
There you go, $12. And that is
get them from fringe.co.nz.
Yeah, search for worst game on there. The price of one beer, you could say. Mm. And there absolutely will be beer at the show. You can purchase. It's a licensed venue. Must be over 18. And have ID if you can ask for ID. But come along and support us. We're doing something weird. We haven't done been on stage before the podcast before, so we'll see how it goes. But let's jump back into actual football and talk about the Phoenix's tool draw with the Wanderers. It's weird not having, like, I was going to say home game, but is it really? Anyway.
Well, it's home if you're kind of living in Mexico, I think.
Yeah, it has more of a home vibe with those Mexican fans there. True. They're just fantastic.
They're amazing.
They made a huge difference the last two games, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
It would have been nice if the Aussie police didn't harass them, but, you know, Brown in Australia.
Well, so I put the boot in the Phoenix a little after the Mariners game because I know some of the Mariners fans reasonably well, having been there a couple times and hung out with them a fair bit. And they were getting harassed when they beat us. And I kind of raised that with the club on Twitter, and people pointed out to me that it's apparently a New South Wales police requirement at outdoor venues at the moment. There's no standing, singing, or yelling.
Mexicans doing all three of those things.
Yeah, it's one of those ones though where if you're going to police it, you need to be policing it properly. Yeah. You can't just pick a 5-minute window to be like, oh, all of a sudden we're going to come over and call this out. And yeah, I don't know, it seems silly to me, but whatever. That if that is the rules there at the moment, which it sounds like it is, then they should probably be making sure people actually abide by them rather than just picking 5-minute windows to come over and yell at a couple of people and you know, that kind of nonsense.
Explain it beforehand as well.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's a statewide, like it's the law at the moment for all outdoor gatherings.
Unfortunately, it just hits football way more than those other sports because football's the one where people want to stand up and sing and chant.
Yeah,
which is unfortunately the worst way to, if you have COVID, yelling loudly is a great way to spread it. So, yeah, I mean, that's what it is. The Victoria games, particularly ones at Amy Park, have also had issues with this as well this season. I think it's a similar policy in place. I don't know if it's law, but policy in place from the...
Yeah, law's probably the trust, strong.
Yeah, the ruling from the government. But definitely it's something across all of Melbourne Park, which involves the Australian Open as well.
Yeah.
But the weird thing there is that there has been no or seemingly no policing of it at the Australian Open, yet heavy-handed at Amy Park. So, hey, we're not there. We don't know what their restrictions are. Abide by the rules.
The rules.
If you go into the football, it's a privilege, so abide by the rules. There we go. Yeah. But those Mexicans are great, and they got rewarded by Uli de Villa playing pretty well by what I hear. I haven't seen the game, full disclosure, so I'll let Dave and Dave on his weird microphone and Frosty talk about most of it. But,
oh, good.
Hey, it's a point on the board that we haven't had for a little while, which can only be a good thing, right?
Well, you're kind of bearing the lead a little bit. It's like, yeah, he played well. There are a few guys that played well, but the team personnel was a massive change, like five changes. Guys that hadn't really seen a whole lot of football, like Ollie Sale, coming in ahead of Stefan Marinovic, which is a massive call.
Yep.
Did it work?
Yeah. With the exception of almost throwing it into the net himself, which was... Oh, so laughable, but he managed to stop it rolling in. Yeah. But
what did he do?
He was going to throw it out, and I think he stopped and tried to pull it in.
He kind of hooked it back at his own net, but he had the foresight to realise as well he couldn't re-pick it up because he was kind of going to pick it up, and then he's like, oh, actually, I can't do that either, and he just hoofed it, which was the right call.
Hilarious.
Throwing it to yourself is not really a goer for picking it up.
You're certainly not throwing it to your own net. To yourself, that's...
No, it was almost very bad. But he made some great saves. And,
he did.
I think he was probably the most surprising change for me because most of the others, you know, we had a lot of players out injured or suspended, and so some changes had to be rung elsewhere in the field, whereas this wasn't a change you had to make. And I think, honestly, it was probably one of the best ones. There's another player I'm sure we'll talk about later who I also thought was excellent, but Ollie Sale... coming out of nowhere to have an absolute blinder, which admittedly he's done in the past as well when he's been called up to play A-League.
Yeah, true.
Through necessity, normally, he's actually had really good games. But this one, I don't know what Stefan's been doing in training, but obviously they've been liking the look of Ollie in it, and it kind of showed on the park. He was looking in
prepping
good nick.
Prepping for when Marinovic refuses to get a vaccine, potentially.
Well, that's a conspiracy theory we'll address at the time. No, I mean, I think Stefan's, he's had a couple of bloopers this season. One of them led to a goal where he came out of the box for some reason.
Yeah.
But so that was, you know, maybe
they're
it's
not,
there.
They're not the sort of mistakes, though, that normally see you dropped in the A-League.
No.
I think would be the way I'd preface that. Because I agree, he's made a couple of mistakes, but A-League level expected mistakes, I guess.
Yeah, normally, I guess, the second keeper in an A-League team isn't much chop for the most part, but you know, Ollie's obviously doing it.
The A-League has a weird thing where either you have a clear first keeper and then a like massively lower keeper, or you just have two medium rate first, like in the Italiano Moss days when Moss was no longer at his peak, we had kind of two keepers.
Moss Paston as well.
Yeah,
I would have said though, we're in the former position of those, right? Where we have a clear first keeper and quite a drop to the second. I don't think we have two reasonably equal keepers here, but Ollie put in a hell of a shift and certainly made a shout that he could well be. And we've known, you know, the Phoenix have had him around this long because they do think he's going to develop into a good keeper. And, you know, we might have just seen a real glimpse of him stepping up.
Yeah, he was really solid. I mean, there was a couple of times he had to make some good reflex saves. That one off, was it Yeboah, where he cut across to the right and gave it absolutely the laces.
Yep.
It was near him, but he had to palm it away nice and hard, got it out to the side. There was a save in down low at one stage. It was tidy.
There were two or three full stretch saves that you wouldn't have complained if he hadn't. Like, you know, it's not expected in the A-League you get all of those, and he got all of them.
Yep.
The only real mistake was one that led to nothing and was created by himself, really.
Yeah.
There's probably other changes in the first 11. The rest of them all pretty much forced changes. De Vea and Laws both being injured, so...
Well, Laws was on the bench.
Yeah, yeah, sure. But he was there because of injury.
Yeah.
He was not quite good enough to play 90 minutes.
Touch and go, I think, was the issue.
So McGinn came into the team. Tim Payne slotted into the centre-back position, and Louis Fendon came on to right-back, which is a position he's become very familiar with over the years at the Phoenix. How did they go? Did they hold the fort okay? Obviously, they gave up two goals, but...
You've got to say that McGing dropped off on the second one, but I thought he was pretty decent. Tim Payne really slotted in. He's like, I've never seen him play centre back at this level before.
Yeah, we've seen him for Eastern Suburbs.
Yeah, but that's definitely a position level.
He's familiar with the ideas of having done it for the National League, but
he was very physical. He got involved. I remember at least that diving header he put in. It was coming in. He realised he needed to get something to it, but he just committed fully and ended up headering it maybe 30 metres away. It was great. You like seeing that as a centre back. Louis was exactly what you'd expect before he got the yips last year. Like, if you just ignored that, that was Louis. He just was up and down, working hard. I've heard people blame him for the first goal, for not cutting off. So the first goal was a free kick out to the left, their left. Yeah. And
we'll come to the goals probably soon, but
okay,
yeah,
which wasn't fair. I had a look at the highlights because I was thinking that it was weird that he didn't go. But I think it was their centre back came in and literally blocked him off.
Yep,
pushed him into the wall because he's not much of a unit as Louis. He redeems
especially
himself
with late. No shoulders.
yeah, true. I mean, everyone touch wood, please.
Don't touch the shoulders; they will dislocate.
Yeah. Yeah, the back four actually worked, considering that they wouldn't have played together in that formation with the exception of the lead-up to this. I thought they were pretty solid. It was set piece and coordination that caught us. And
set pieces catch us with our A squad as well. So, this isn't a surprise. I think it's like I want to take a step back from all of what you've said, which I agree with, and say, so a lot of people saw this whole starting lineup and thought it was going to be a significant change in formation, which it just wasn't. We were playing the same formation. It just looked different on paper. But I think in many ways, the fact the back four looked as solid as they did could be, not necessarily is, but could be credited to the fact that Ufi wants to play this style where everyone is used to that formation and you can swap out the pieces as needed, but everyone knows what's expected of, you know, the entire formation and the roles are very interchangeable. So you weren't asking people to do a hell of a lot different. You know, Tim Payne is playing in a totally different position, but the unit he's working with is largely similar, and I suspect they're doing a lot of this in training because that's exactly what Ufi wants out of this particular formation, is everyone to be able to interchange and understand the roles of each of those different positions. So
it is the positive of the fixed, you know, single formation, is that everyone should know it.
Well, but you might have a single formation, though, where it's not quite so fluid. The kind of magic square formation they're looking to play is very fluid. That, by nature, is the formation. So everyone's expected to be able to kind of play a lot of the other different roles. It's not, you know, total football, if you will, but it's that sort of ethos.
Yeah. I think that it does have its drawbacks, and I think that's what cost us in the end, which, there's a lack of flexibility tactically speaking, but there's also the fact that if you have an up and down game like this one was, everyone does a lot of running. It's not like there's only a couple of people that do a lot of running and you can sub them. Everyone, you saw at the end of the game, Ben Wayne literally just fell down on the ground and sat there, and he looked exhausted. He'd probably done a lot of running, a massive amount of running, won a lot of balls in the air, which I thought was amazing. He's proven to be quite a strong player back to goal, but he was dead. Clayton Lewis, his legs blew out in about the 70th minute, and he was running on fumes after that, but he didn't stop running.
No.
He was fantastic, by the way. That slotting into DM, just the fact, I mean, he's not normally a defensive player, but as soon as he gets a little more central, we know from seeing from the All Whites when he plays Andy Prem and the like, he gets in the central role and he's actually really tidy at it. He's a really good all-round footballer.
We didn't talk about David Ball's red card last week because we didn't record last week. Obviously meant he was missing. Let's briefly touch on that. Clear red card. No complaints.
Yeah.
Like,
my only complaint was that it was Simon and it should have just been waved on because Simon's done a shitload worse than he deserves.
I mean, you could
everything he gets.
You could argue if you're going to get sent off for tackling Matt Simon with serious foul play, you may as well injure him.
Well, I was just thinking it's just ironic. I mean, the number of those that Simon's done in his career and gotten away with not even a card.
Not quite that bad.
Yeah.
No.
I've seen him go through the back of players and get nothing.
Yeah, but this was flying through the air.
Yeah, it was a definite red. You definitely can't argue with it.
Nah.
No, Bully didn't either. He was just kind of like trying to talk it down, but it was not.
If we want to complain about anything, it is absolutely not the red card to David Ball.
It's the context,
the context that led up to it. There's a penalty shout that we never even saw a replay of, which clearly was what led to his frustration and very little communication from the referee. And it, you know, that led to this, but that doesn't excuse it in any way, shape or form. Bawley is an experienced player who shouldn't let something like that frustrate him to this level. Yeah.
But I think it's the frustration of the whole season on top of that.
Correct. You've got the wider context and then you've got that one moment of frustration and then this brain explosion. But it's a red card. There's nothing to say about it other than that. But
is he out for two games total? The one that we just played in one more, I think?
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah.
So he got the minimum for the offence.
Yeah. So did Ben Wayne slot straight into his role, or was he slightly different?
Ben Wayne, I want to say, was probably, for me, the best player. You've given him raps, but I thought he was absolutely excellent. He slotted largely into the sort of role we expect Hamed to be playing, you know. Yeah. Really good hold up play, good strength on the ball, you know. They were, you know, when they needed to, pumping long ball, and Waino was winning it in the air, holding it up nicely, you know, doing all that stuff you expect
from
a big target man up front. But
the number of balls in the air he won was outstanding. Yep. Like, he was dominating those centre backs, and these are not chumps back there.
No, and so in that transition play, he was playing exactly that role you're expecting, you know, a Hamed to be playing. But when it came to kind of the final third and, you know, nice build up and all of that, he wasn't seeing a lot of ball. And I don't think that was through any fault of his own.
Ball's in the stands.
Yeah. But so I think in that particular position he got a little lost, but I think it was not because of him. I think he was making good runs and trying to be involved, but he just couldn't have a lot of impact there.
That's the thing with a striker. You can have an invisible game and it's not your fault because you were doing a lot of work, but just not getting.
He was definitely not invisible.
No, and sure. In transition he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And a lot of really hard graft that he put in defensively and in transition, but it just was disappointing for him. It couldn't turn into a goal other than he did score one that was ruled out for offside.
Yeah, that was unfortunate, just that delay in the pass. Yep. He was making the run off the shoulder, and I can't remember who it was, took an extra half touch, and it was a shame because it was a great finish.
Speaking of great finishes, the first goal to Marinovic, was it a the look on your face suggests to me it wasn't a great finish, the first goal.
No, he tried to nuts the keeper. It's like...
Yeah.
Well, I've just...
I mean, if we want to talk about great finishes, it's the goal that wasn't. It was Piscopo hitting the post.
Absolute screamer. That's what I'm thinking of. I saw this on Twitter, and that's what I'm thinking of.
That would have been a hell of a goal. Yeah. That was a goal
of a year touch, and then he's wrapped his foot around and curled a half volley and straight onto the upright at speed.
Yeah.
How many times have we hit the post this season? Have we done it more than we scored?
It's every game.
Yeah.
We are crazy. Just inches away from having a great season.
Yeah.
But we should mention Piscopo. Well, that first 30 minutes, fuck me, he was amazing.
Was the goal really that unsatisfying that you don't even want to talk about it at all?
No, the pass, there was two passes that set it up. There was a first pass, I think it was from Rufa, who saw that Uli had managed to find a tiny little gap in amongst four Wanderers players, picked him out. Great pass there. Uli turns with the first touch and just hits a first-time pass straight through Mradovic, running diagonal to cut it off right through the middle, one-on-one with the keeper, tries to nuts the keeper. That doesn't go so good, but fortunately the ball falls to him just as he's running past the keeper, and open goal, taps it home.
It was
a great run by Mradovic.
A decent team goal, but it was unexciting in every facet. Like, a great ball from Uli.
Oh,
like fantastic ball, but it was just two quick, really good passes and then a tap in. You know, it really, really nice football, but not the sort of stuff that you're like, oh my God, that was amazing. It was just good execution of two passes.
Yeah.
We haven't seen a lot of that, but it was, you know, just straight through the middle. You know, we basically walked it through, and that shouldn't be happening. That's an indictment on their defense rather than anything from us, except great execution of the passes.
I think they were just, there were players in the zone to defend that. And it was just they managed to pick two perfect passes in a row. And that's what can happen if you get two perfect passes. You know, and we found that later on when the legs got tired, we tried these passes and they just weren't quite coming
off. Perfect anymore.
Yeah. But Piscopo, brilliant that first half hour. The Wanderers, to their credit, realised they had to kick not just Uli off the park, they had to kick Piscopo off the park and proceeded to do that, which, you know, it's the A-League. That's what you get when you get players that are exceptional. They get booted.
Yeah. No, you had it happen to Roller. You had it happen to Carlos Hernandez. You have it lots of
Eiffel. Name a player.
Eiffel.
Yeah, it happens. And it's a legitimate tactic. They were rolling their defenders around so that weren't picking up extras. But yeah, I mean, you look at that team and we should have been absolutely sconed. You look at the Wanderers team, who they've got former Premier League players on their bench.
Yeah.
That is an exceptionally deep team in the A-League, exceptionally deep.
I was suspecting that the Wanderers weren't doing too well this season, but no, that's not the case. They're fourth.
They started poorly, but they've been ticking on really nicely, and they've just brought back Mitch Duke, another guy, former Premier League player.
Cox?
No, Cox has been with them for a while. Yeah.
Those are all words you're saying.
Yeah, I can't remember. Like his
you,
name's
you look
like
you've got a team sheet in front of you, Pat. I feel you could aid him.
I don't know who's who.
Are there any of them called something like Just or Much?
Much. M-U-T-C-H.
There you go.
Jay Much. What's his first name? Jordan Much.
Yeah. He's one of their big signings that's just come in. They had Duke on the bench, Cox on the bench. That is not a bad team.
No.
Much Cox.
And they brought those players on and
they were effective.
Exactly. The game changed.
Yeah, we were I mean the ball transitioned through midfield a lot both directions. It was kind of very end to end, and that didn't play into our kind of game plan because we were doing a lot of running and having to work really hard and legs got heavy. Uli was less effective by the end. Piscopo ran out of gas. I think probably the 50 or 60th minute, he just kind of slowly tapered off because his first 30 was amazing, the best.
That's one thing that I have noticed through this season is that we look tired in the games and often we're only making three subs.
Yeah.
The teams against us are making five subs, which does genuinely the season look to be making a huge difference. Do we think that Ufi doesn't want to make five subs because he feels like it will disrupt the team too much, or do we feel like we just don't have the depth there on the bench to justify making extra subs?
I think it might be a bit of both. Yeah. But I hope, and I mean, I'm sure we're going to get to this, but I think a lot of people would have seen this game and the changes and a lot of youth out there and, you know, all the people who want a bunch of Kiwis on the team and, you know, all that stuff are going to be screaming, we should play this same lineup again. I disagree with those people, but I do think there should be a vote of confidence in using some of those players as depth, because I think a few of them were largely unproven. And guys like Ben Wayne, who, you know, while there is definitely a big Ben Wayne fan club who would love to see him starting every game and playing 90 minutes, there are people out there like me who think he's pretty unproven. And while I want to see him do really well and I want to see him get chances, he's got to earn them. I think that performance last week earns him some chances. I think it gets him 20 minutes off the bench when everyone is fit and, you know, ready to roll. I think it earns him some chances that I don't know that he'd earned previously.
And we've got those subs available. It's not like we're going to have to stop making another sub to do that.
Exactly. And so I think this, hopefully, rather than being a wholesale shift in our starting lineup because a few guys had a good game, because they did have a good game, I think this hopefully gives us a bit more confidence in the wider squad and making some tweaks and giving guys time off the bench to ensure that we stay up-tempo, because I think you're right. I think, you know, there have been first 20 minutes we've looked bad, but certainly towards the end of games we've looked bad.
And that's when the goals happened. The goals happened, both of them, between the 70th and 80th minute. Were they that we got languid and tired, or?
No, the first one was a good set-piece move where their centre-back managed to isolate Louis and basically push him into the wall, meaning that they had outside, just flick it over to the left-hand side, who volleyed it over to the far right, and the back post guys didn't. They dropped off.
It was well-worked.
Yeah, it was a well-worked and well-executed. I mean, to get a volley on a volley pass on a free kick, that's pretty decent.
And it was clearly a set-piece move. Totally. Like this one has been practiced a lot and executed perfectly here.
Yeah, we fell for it. Like,
yeah, I think it just it was a bit naive of Louis to of the defenders on our right hand side to tuck in so tight.
Yeah,
we were literally inside the line of the post when we started, and it's basically their centre back just slotted his frame in the way and just kind of bought everyone a bit of a half second.
Well, it's a smart play because the angle that the first man, the man who's left free, has is a spot you're kind of in some ways okay with him shooting from, but the set piece is not designed for that player to shoot. That's always playing it back across to open it up on the other side. Yep. And that's exactly what happens here. I think if you're expecting him to head the ball on target or play a volley like that on target, your goalie's always going to be favourite there.
Yeah, agreed.
And that's exactly the reason you've left him alone, is because you've gone, actually, if you want to have a go from there, to some extent, we're all right with that, you know. But that's not what the set piece is designed to do, and it, yeah, clearly caught us out.
Yeah, it just would have been, I mean, best case scenario, Louis gets free and gets out there and Alex puts pressure on him, limits his options, and then, you know, it's less likely to get a nice, correct, easy pass.
Yeah. I want to segue to Louis getting free, but I have to do another Wanderers golf before we get there. Which was the second Wanderers goal. Disappointing to so quickly give up a lead and be behind. It looked like Phoenix of old. Heads drop after the first goal, ship a second.
It felt like it was coming, to be honest, to me.
There was a lot of Wanderers pressure.
The tide had shifted even before the first goal. It felt like a goal was coming. Mm. If we could have nicked a second, you would have felt a bit safer, but you felt like at any moment a goal was coming for Wanderers, and they got one.
There
and
it then was.
Their heads were up even more, and there was the second one, you know.
I literally put that second goal at heavy legs, because there was just that chip over the top of the two centre backs. Payne, who'd been very good in the air the whole game, all of a sudden he jumped and he barely got 2 inches off the ground. Yeah. McGing, I don't think, got off the ground, and it was just perfectly weighted that drifted over the top. And who was it? Bruce Kamau running back post, easy tapping.
Yeah, one of those situations where you feel like the attacking team, being the Wanderer, is that if you can get one goal and equalise, you'll win the game, you'll score another one.
Well, that was exactly it. As soon as that first goal went in, it was like, oh no, we're toast here. They'll get a second.
Especially with the strength they had brought on.
Totally.
Well, oh my God, you know? Yes.
Yeah.
And we didn't have anyone to bring on,
We had Louis Fenton on the field, though, who...
Well...
We bought Laws off the bench, didn't we? Or did he not come on? He was the strongest player you had on the bench.
Yeah.
The rest of it, you already had your kind of reserve players out there on the field.
Who's an A-League rookie. Yeah. So we were, there was, I think, Tiatafai, Laws,
Charles Lachlan.
Yeah.
Yeah, they brought him on.
New signing. And
I thought he was good. Oh, I see you shaking your head. I thought he was good.
Yeah, I didn't see anything.
I think he bought a lot of what you expect a Soterio-type player to bring, you know, some energy, some decent touches, but looking significantly more controlled and a physical presence than Soterio does.
He's a big unit. Yeah.
And quick and, you know, fit. There was a lot there that I thought, yep, I can see this offering something. And against tired legs, when a game just needs to be closed out, seems like a decent option to me.
He's definitely at that roll of the dice that Soterio was. It's like he's a physical, good athlete, and if he can halfway play football, then he's an asset.
And that's basically exactly who he's replacing in the squad, given the injury. He's just another one of those, and he's available because he's in Australia.
Imagine you're up by a couple of goals with 15 to play, and you bring both him and Soterio on.
Great.
The defenders are going to be hating their lives, you know? I can see it working.
And then Louis headed in and equalised basically straight away from a free kick.
Yeah, it was not the sort of position and header you generally expect Louis to win, but fantastic effort.
Yeah, well, I don't know how he had fresh enough legs to get up that high, because he got up above pretty much the central defenders that he was up against, and just it was a nice header too.
It was. And we've seen him score, you know, we know he's no mug with his head. I mean, his first goal for the Phoenix was an absolute screamer of a diving header.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
But that was in space. It wasn't jumping in traffic against central defenders, whereas this was, Full credit to him. It's a great goal.
Yep. Credit to Roofs as well. I've been bagging him a bit for his pedestrian nature.
Yeah.
But he got up into the box and he put in a nice effort there. I thought that was – he had a reasonable game, and I think that it was kind of interesting that it felt like he had a better game with certainly with Clayton Lewis beside him than he had with Redenton beside him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this basically pushes Redenton to the bottom of the pile in that midfield now. Lewis looked really good in that central.
I mean, Redenton was already bottom of the pile in many ways.
Well, in the central channel.
Yeah.
But Lewis wasn't an option there. He was only ever, it felt like he was only ever considered out wide. But after that, I think he's been, he was
which
pretty decent.
Feels like a waste to me because we know from, you know, Lewis's experience that he's good central.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. For me, that was just Oofy not realising.
Yeah, I agree.
Or having not tried it yet, at least.
Yeah. There was definitely a lot of that.
But the upshot of it all is that we had a tall draw.
Yeah.
Managed to see that out. And
oh, and we mentioned before, Waino scored another goal after that. So we could have won this 3-2, but it was offside. And it was clearly offside.
Yep.
But, you know, we were pushing right to the end there. But it's still, for large parts of that last bit, felt like the Wanderers had the momentum. But we were hopeful on a counter.
I mean, it felt like this was a moral victory. It was only a draw, but the fact that it was mostly second stringers and unproven players.
I mean, before the game, you probably would have taken a point if it was an offer.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Particularly with as many players out.
Mm,
but
that's the reason why.
At the point we had the goal up and we got as deep into the game as we did, I think this felt a lot like a loss in many ways. I think obviously we held on and we showed some grit there. But this is, we were in a position that I think we probably should have been able to close this out. And if it wasn't for our lack of A-string players, we probably would have.
Yeah.
It was the fact that you couldn't bring on legs at the level required that left us a little short here.
Yeah, for me, it's just that lack of finishing. I mean, realistically, that first 30 minutes, we were well on top.
Yep.
It tapered off, but certainly the first half was ours.
Yeah, but you don't see very often in the A-League that teams really take advantage of a good first 30 minutes.
No, but it's, I mean, we had opportunities.
Brisbane did the other week against the Victory where they went up 2 or 3 goals.
Yeah, but against the Victory doesn't count anymore.
Yeah. Hey, we're above the Victory now on the table. That win, that draw, that point, sorry, leaps us up just above them. They're on 4 points. We're on 5. So
how many games played? Just for reference, because I know the table is similar.
Both on 7. Both on 7. Cool. Yeah. Other matches for the round. We started the round off with a Varsicle, where Adelaide won 3-2 over the Mariners, thanks to 3 penalties.
That was possibly the worst refereeing effort I have seen in the A-League.
I mean, the first one
that I can remember.
The first one, maybe. The first penalty, maybe. The second one, absolutely not.
No.
And then the third one, pretty much because the players realised, the Central Coast defenders realised they couldn't do anything because there was going to be a penalty awarded against them. So it just kind of stopped a little bit. But yeah, they were robbed. They should have got more out of this game than Mariners. Yeah.
I mean, Adelaide have been stinking up the joint basically the whole season.
Yeah.
And then the only reason they got 3 goals was some average decision making.
Yeah. Hey, but Tommy Urich still slotted all 3 pens, which
they were good.
They were great. West United had
a red card after full time in that one as well. Just for the train spotters, you don't see many of those.
Yeah. 90+7 minutes there.
Yeah. So it was after the full time whistle. He went up and said something to the ref, and card was straight out. See you
I
later.
I suspect the word cheat might have been involved because that's a very easy way to get yourself sent off. But if you're ever going to call a ref a cheat, it was probably after this game that you'd do it.
Oh, I don't think you can ever accuse an A-League ref of cheating. Just it's not good enough.
Yeah. Mm. The thing that irks me here is that if this was a performance from a referee and he was just making calls based on what he saw in the park, sure. The fact that the VAR still can't fix this shit. I don't want to go into it, but it's just like the implementation, the subjectivity to it is just still broken. It hasn't fixed anything.
I've gone past blaming refs. I'm now blaming the referee training system because they haven't taught them any better than – it's been, what, 3 years?
Yeah. So you mean VARs in particular?
VARs and all
field
referees.
They are still a referee. He's wider training.
Yeah. They're obviously not teaching them properly.
Well,
yeah.
And I think the thing for me as well, and we get to it in a later game as well here, but the commentators were talking a lot about, you know, having contact with Strebro around some of this stuff. And during, I think it was the Victory game, that Strebro was literally texting in to the commentators in the box to explain or justify decisions happening on the field. But after this Adelaide Mariners game,
yeah.
they admit they were wrong, they apologise again. But how many times this season have we had the boss of the referees have to come out and apologise to a team and fans for a mistake they've got wrong, and yet we still aren't seeing any actual improvement or really anything happening to those referees? Because the referees who are making some of these decisions are getting 1 week off and then they're right back out there in the middle again, which is, you know, that's not enough time to retrain these people. And I do not honestly believe that we do not have some other referees coming through who we could give a shot, because I'm sure there is a bit of a step down for sure. But in reality, we're not getting good referees at the moment. So is it that unbelievable to give some other referees a shot who aren't the same old faces who've been getting it wrong for years?
The thing is, the panel is selected before the season starts. And so I don't know what the process is about pushing someone up now that we know that panel is incompetent.
That process has to be easier to fix than trying to fix VAR.
Yeah.
Right? And particularly the VARs, we are seeing the same faces not even get stood down because the decisions are being hung on the man in the middle, regardless of whether or not it's actually VAR that's potentially to blame here. And so I think it's frustrating that we not only have, you know, Strebray in some cases coming out and justifying decisions that everyone thinks is wrong, but also apologising for the most blatant ones that even he can't dig his way out of. And it just feels like the whole system is losing credibility. And they're not doing anything to help build it back up, you know, coming out and apologising, oh, but we're not going to do anything, you know, that's not actually helping your credibility. If he came out and said, yeah, we messed that up, but here's the steps we're taking to address that, here's what we've done. And I understand that obviously you don't want to, you know, individually bag out referees and all that kind of stuff. You know, they don't want to go, we've stood them down for a month because of whatever. But you still need to be doing something tangible to build up that credibility of the refereeing system again. And there's just nothing in that space from them.
Western United had a 4-1 win over MacArthur. That's the first time MacArthur really looked really poor this season. They got their goal very late. Sydney FC and Brisbane Roar played a 0-0 draw, which was described as entertaining by the A-League on Twitter, but I don't know if that's true or not. And then the Jets got a 1-0 win over the Victory, which was another dire performance from the Victory.
Storm Roo should have been sent off.
Should he?
Absolutely.
Great. Was that a VAR fuck up again?
No, he ends up getting a yellow card and going off injured, but he high boot studs to the face and it's a yellow card.
I saw this.
This is the one that Strew Braid texted in and said they've actually got that right because reasons, TM. No, and it was like, wait a second, what?
His leg is around the neck of the player.
It's a red card.
Yeah.
Everyone expects that to be a red card.
Yeah. All right, let's move on from referees because we're going long.
Give me 1 second.
Okay.
This is... When you were talking about they're making these decisions that are wrong, I mean, the problem is you can apologise after it, but it sets a precedent that the Victory game where we had the two high boots, not even, it was one yellow card for two high boots. It was ridiculous. And of course, that now sends the message to the rest of the league. Even if you tell the refs, hey, knock that on the head, the rest of the players are going, well, we can contest the ball in the air with our feet. It's now legit. And that's what'll happen. You'll get Storm Roo kicking someone in the head.
I can't remember his name. Who's the striker? O'Donovan. Roy O'Donovan.
Yeah.
It's a very similar situation. He was going for the ball trying to score a goal and it was a grand final.
Grand final, 90th minute.
And he cops a red card and all the abuse in the world for being, you know, basically a cheating dog. This was just as bad in spirit.
I mean,
and instead it's a yellow card and that's justified as the right decision. I just, you know, like admittedly the outcome was worse in the O'Donovan situation, you know, it drew blood and there was a range of reasons that was worse, but the intent was probably more pure.
And in saying that, blood was drawn from Marco Rojas's head previously and that was also a yellow card.
Yep. It broke his nose and ripped his eye.
Moving on to the Melbourne Victory game, which is, as we record, tomorrow night, Wednesday evening at 9:05 p.m. at New Zealand time. This has obviously been rescheduled a couple of times. Supposed to be last week. Supposed to be on Waitangi Day and then supposed to be last week. And now we finally get to play it. Bottom of the league, spoon off at this point. Probably not going to fill the neutrals with much hope, but we finally get to play the Melbourne Victory when they're shit, which is good. We haven't been able to do it so far this season.
You know we're going to play them back in form, though. That's our modus operandi.
Have they just sacked their coach? Have they just sacked Grant Brebner? Is that
The rumour's been swirling. Have they actually done it?
I don't know if they've done it.
I saw tweets immediately after the game suggesting he was going to get sacked, and I haven't actually seen a confirmation he has.
Don't know. We'll find out tomorrow night with who's on.
There's certainly pressure on. There seems to be some infighting in there. In their board around, I think there are some factions who want him gone and other factions who are digging in their heels, and I think there'll be some interesting outcomes with
I think someone gone. Regardless of what the board's doing, his position's all but untenable now. They've just looked so bad.
He has to get a win.
Especially when we beat them 3-0. That'll be him gone. Wouldn't that be so nice to be the team that finally gets a coach sacked? I don't think we've ever done it before. Ever.
Losing to us would be a sackable offence, that's for sure.
Yeah, so far.
Well, I mean, honestly, if Rojas isn't back for them, I don't know how they can possibly win. He's looked their only threat at all. And let's face it, if you've only got one threat on the pitch,
yep,
it's easy just to kick the shit out of him all day. And
yeah.
As we found out.
Do you reckon Josh Laws will come back into the team, given he was touch and go on the weekend?
Yeah, I think basically he's okay, but I think everyone else is still, like Hamed had a 2 weeks for a hammy. Yeah,
Devere's gone for a while.
Devere's gone.
Yeah. He's basically season.
Well, 12 weeks, I think they said it was, yeah. So back into the season at the very least.
Well, you're thinking 12 rounds, 12 weeks might well be this season done and dusted because of how congested it's going to have to be.
I think
it'd be touch and go with this fitness anyway.
I think the season's going to be so backloaded that I think we'll actually have him for more than 4 or 5 games.
But even then, he's getting gone up to match fitness.
Definitely gone for this game. So
Devlin got back on the field for 20 or 30, so he should be back, I think.
So somewhat reverting back to what we've seen previously from the Phoenix.
Well, realistically, there's still a few players that are going to be out. Devere, Soterio, Hamed will all be missing.
Yep, Hamed's the biggest loss there.
Well, I thought Wayne...
Based on what we saw from Wayne, though, I'm not convinced. Like, we've expected a lot from Hamed and we haven't seen it, whereas Wayne was out there offering quite a lot.
Yep. I'm still willing to hold judgment on Hamed. I think it might take him a little while to get going.
Oh, if he gets going, it'll be well worth the wait.
Yeah.
But...
If he can get up to Uli kind of standards, so I don't know how long it took Uli last season to start
him,
firing.
Yeah, both times we restarted the season, he was scratching.
I think there'll be some interesting calls made because I think, you know, do you bring Stefan back in or do you keep playing Ollie?
No, apparently...
Sale said in the press conference afterwards when he was asked, it was going to remain Ollie Sale.
Yeah, which I think is a good call.
Yeah. Ollie didn't do anything horrifically wrong, almost did.
His distribution, I think, it seems to be a bit better, and I think maybe that's the speed of transition that they want to get. If we're gonna sit deep, we have to transition quickly.
Yeah. You think looking at the centre backs, McGing's probably the one who loses a spot.
I think
Payne stays in there.
Especially with Laws plays left centre.
Yep.
So I think that one's a bit of a no-brainer.
And then Devlin
comes back in the middle. Oh, Louis stays.
Yeah, Louis stays in right, covering Tim Payne's right back.
Yep. He had a reasonable game. So yeah.
Devlin, I think, comes back in.
Yep.
I think it's probably Lewis who loses out there. But as you say, it may be Redenton who suffers his kind of bench spot there.
For sure.
To Clayton. I think Wayne stays on the park.
The question is kind of Mradovic, realistically, you know, whether they push Mradovic out and Piscopo up or the other way around. Mradovic looks a lot better up the top than he does out wide.
Yeah.
Like, he's a different player.
Pisco less effective as well, though.
He's effective, but he seems to be more effective wide. For me, he feels like Piscopo sits out wide, Mradovic goes up top with Wayne. Great.
Cool.
But that's asking a lot of two rookies.
Yep.
But
hey, it's the team to play golf against if you're trying to do that.
Yeah, my only issue with that team is that it feels really unfair on Clayton Lewis. He's put in a really good performance, and the best he's going to get is a bench spot.
Well, I think as well, you've got Ball out for one more game, right? And then one of Piscopo or Mradovic is going to lose a spot.
It's Mradovic,
probably, but I think there's no reason not to have both those players on there. Say, this is your chance. Whichever of you sticks your hand up, keeps the spot.
Yep.
That's fair.
It's the fairest way to do it, and I think, to be honest, that's how we'll go.
Do you think we've got any chance of getting a win out of this one, or do you think we'll honk up and join again and get a draw?
I think... It feels like that was a moral victory. You're putting on a lot of second stringers and they fought really hard, scored two good goals, were on top for a good part of the game. That feels to me like it's kind of lifted the team from where we were. I mean, considering we'd stunk up the joint for so long and then they put in a good, hard effort, my only concern is just that the leg's going to be too tired for, you know, only a few days on.
Victory played on the same day as us. Yep. They played on Sunday as well, so I think it'll go both ways. Dave, do you reckon we'll turn the corner?
I'm not convinced. I think this match is the test. You're playing a team that should be beatable, And if we don't beat them, I think it'll just prove that that performance we saw against the Wanderers was a bit of a dead cat bounce. Yep. You know, you had a lot of players being given their shot, and they went out there and they put it all in for probably that first half. And then we saw the second half, when it was business as usual for them, that it started to drop off a bit. The passion wasn't there as strong, and, you know, the legs were tired that stuff. Yeah. And I think going into this next game with some of those guys no longer feeling that pressure of this is my one shot, it'll be really interesting to see whether or not this was dead cat bounce or genuine turning of a corner.
We also then turn around and play again on Sunday against the Jets in Newcastle, which I genuinely have no idea how this will go until I see the game against Victory. I think that's going to be the test of whether we can try and foot it against one of those mid-table solid teams or not. So can't really say much more about it on this episode, other than telling you that we're definitely not going to record before this extra game on Sunday.
No, but also we get ball back, potentially Hamed back, whether that makes a difference. My curiosity about this game is kind of whether we see these nominally first-team players.
Yeah.
Whether we see them – not whether we see them go back in, because I think that's almost a fait accompli, but I think whether they feel the pressure now and go, right, I'm playing for my spot now, and they step up.
Which would be fantastic to see. I mean,
that's what I'm hoping.
They need a little bit of that, because I think there clearly was some issues within the team there. The frustration that we saw from Bawley was not a symptom just of stuff going on the field. I'm sure that they all know they've been underperforming and should be doing better. So I think now they're seeing the kids go out there and actually show, we're not even as good as you, but we can actually foot it in this league. You better step up. So
Rest of the round. In 9 minutes' time, Melbourne Victory take on Sydney FC. That's 9:05 Tuesday night.
Victory.
Melbourne City. Melbourne City. I thought I said that.
Oh, I think you said Victory, but I was only half paying attention as usual.
Listeners, tweet me and let me know if I said the right thing.
Or don't.
They're not even listening either.
Please do. Friday at 11:05 PM is Perth taking on Brisbane Roar. I see Perth hosting games. Saturday night, double header. Western Sydney Wanderers taking on Adelaide United. Melbourne Victory versus West United. Melbourne Victory versus West United. What? You're looking very confused.
Is it? I thought you said they were playing Sunday.
They are playing Saturday.
Ah, right.
We're playing Sunday again against the Newcastle Jets. And before us on Sunday is Sydney taking on MacArthur. So a lot of teams playing a lot of games quite close together, especially the games between New South Wales-based teams and the Victoria-based teams.
Well, and we've announced the double header. When is that? I know it's
On like the 20-somethingth of March, where we're taking one of our games. It's the 21st of March. Yep. We're taking our game against Brisbane up the coast to Newcastle. We're going to play them at 6 PM New Zealand time, and then at 8:40 PM New Zealand time is the Jets taking on Adelaide. So obviously this is the first time ever that we've had an A-League doubleheader.
It would be a hell of an away day. We can't be there.
I'd be so in, because like the Jets fans are coming to our bay for the first game. We're going their bay for the second game.
Any Knicks fans who are over there and able to get to that absolutely be going, because that'll be phenomenal. And the Newcastle boys will look after you. It's a great away trip.
Friend of the pod, Ferns, already messaged us saying socially distance away day, pub crawl, everybody. But it's probably not going to happen in Wellington. What day of the week is the 21st of March? I have no idea. It must be a Saturday
weekend,
or something.
Yeah.
I know it's the weekend. Just don't know what day of the week it is. But that would be a great one to go to.
Yeah.
But hey, we can't.
Next year.
It probably won't be next year because the Phoenix will be back.
Well, probably still a good day to get down to the pub and watch the game though. Because you know you've got other A-League right after.
I'll stick around at the pub and have more beers afterwards.
Yeah.
If it's a Saturday, head to Danger. That is the A-League for this week. That brings us to the ISPS Hannah Men's Premiership, which had its penultimate round with, first of all, Team Wellington getting a 2-0 win over Canterbury United, which was a very good win. Did either of you see this one?
I saw the
second half. I watched it, and Team Wellington were solid, did everything that they needed to do to get the win. Once they were 2-0 up, just banked it. There was nothing really that really troubled them. Carey had a couple of half chances in the second half, but
not really
covered well. So yeah. Andy Bevan's goal in particular is phenomenal. I checked it out. I think it's up for team for goal of the week.
He looked very surprised.
Did he? Did they just like ended up in so much space in the box? Having
oh, no, he slotted him as like, I hit the cover off that. That's yeah, yeah, it's a great finish.
He did very well to work his way through. But yeah, great for T-Dubs to keep that little bit of a distance on third and fourth on the table.
It's nice to see former Phoenix striker Hamish Watson doing well.
Yeah, well, he's been doing well all season.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's been phenomenal.
There we go. Buzzword, yeah, this is his level and he is absolutely killing it at this level.
You've preempted what I was going to bait you with.
But genuinely, so well done. This is the best I've ever seen Hamish Watson play, and he is playing amazingly well.
That 40-metre goal was awareness was beautiful.
The one against Auckland, you mean?
Yeah, where he just... Oh.
Disappointing. It happened when they were 3-0 down, but...
Yeah, take it, though.
Yeah. At the same time, the Wenix managed to hold Auckland City to a 1-0 draw. Auckland City needing simply a point to confirm first on the table. Run some changes. I don't know how significantly they changed the team.
I think it was about 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Rear was skipper, so.
The Wenix looked pretty good, according to Cam, who was there. I was obviously watching the T-Dubs game, but they went up 1-0 to a low... Sorry. The Wenix went up 1-0, then had a man sent off, and about 2 minutes after having one of them sent off, I think it was for a second yellow, Logan Rogerson equalised for Auckland. Auckland confirmed. Oh, they must have already been confirmed because it's head-to-head, isn't it? And they've got a better head-to-head than Team Wellington, having won the game. Yeah, oh, so they would have already had first wrapped up, which is why they made the changes. But it shows you that there is a way through Auckland if you manage to convert it, as we saw earlier in the season. Waitakere managed to get a good 2-0 win over Hawke's Bay United, which, as I come to the table, will show you why it's so important, because Eastern Suburbs and Hamilton Wanderers had a 1-0 draw, which is good for Hamilton but very bad for Eastern Suburbs. Auckland on 27, Team Wellington on 23 points on the table. Then Hamilton Wanderers confirmed semi-finalists for the first time ever, I believe. Which is great for them on 20 points. Then Waitakere and Eastern Suburbs. Waitakere jump Eastern Suburbs onto 17 points.
Oof.
For the first time, bumping Eastern out of the top four. So that's going to be the big test this round. Final round, final game for a bunch of these clubs with the changes to the league next year. We don't know what Team Wellington and Auckland are going to look like, but I know that Hawke's Bay, for example, have announced this will be their last game.
Weren't they basically saying that Auckland City is going to be absorbed into Central or something?
That's been the assumption.
Yeah. That's the assumption, yeah.
But nothing's confirmed in the same way that the assumption is that Miramar and Team Wellington kind of collaborate together, but there's been differences between both pairs of those clubs over the recent past about who does what. So I don't know if it's a given that those are going to combine. But you would think that those two clubs in particular would find somebody to partner up with. Obviously, the Wellington Phoenix will form with lower. I don't know. The Wellington stay in the team and in the league, don't they? That's the one thing that stays in terms of franchises. But anyway, Team Wellington hosting Hamilton Wanderers. Both teams confirmed in the top four. But Hamilton could jump Team Wellington with a good win here if they win well enough to break the head-to-head. Obviously, a draw is enough for Team Wellington. That'll be at 1 p.m. Saturday at David Farrington. An hour later, Canterbury host the Wenix. Both teams gone ski from the season. Auckland hosting Waitakere. Waitakere will be looking to get something out of this to stay ahead of Eastern Suburbs, who are away to Hawke's Bay. Those games, Auckland City game, is at 3 p.m. on Saturday, and then the TV game is Hawke's Bay versus Eastern Suburbs, and that will be confirming who is playing the semifinals the week after, both of those on the 7th of March. So all to play for, particularly for Waitakere and Eastern Suburbs this week. We get down to David Farrington. It'll be the last confirmed home game. Obviously, if things go well, then there'll be a game the next week, probably against Hamilton. Again, hosting Hamilton 2 weeks in a row. For a semi-final, and that could be the last that we see of Team Wellington in Wellington. We don't know yet.
Yep. So, collector's item shirts.
Yeah. Get down and support that team. Buy a sausage. Have a great day out at Davey F. Because you don't know when it'll be back. I think that's the pod for this week, unless anybody has anything to bring in at the 11th hour.
Did you see the tweet from Roy Krishna congratulating Louis on his scoring a goal? And Louis replying and just saying, come home.
Yeah, it was good areas.
Oh, beautiful.
Fair play. I mean,
Louis also tweeting a bunch of the videos of the Mexican fans was quite nice to see.
Well, not just the Mexican fans, but the Mexican fans getting harassed by the security police. and trying to signal boost that. So, yeah. Although, let's start in with the Mexicans because they're phenomenal. Like, I thought it was a one-off the previous week, but I guess Uli's goal when and they all
was the Knicks bust them in.
Amazing. Like, clever. Like, we've got very few other, like, active supporters, and obviously it's really hard to do active support at the moment. We've got no yellow fever from Wellington over there. So, yeah, take whatever you can get. And
oh, it's fantastic.
Seemed to spur Uli on for sure. He was playing great.
Yeah, he's got a saxophone player, no less.
Oh, man, I need to learn how to play the saxophone now, don't I?
Yep.
Got the drums down, but...
Do you? Nah.
Just leave that.
Baiting the hook and throwing it out there.
Just leave it there. Leave it like that to lie for a second. But anyway, thank you for listening this week. We'll be back next week sometime. I won't be here, but the others will hopefully hold the fort. Frosty, you can host for a week.
That's very generous of you, Pat.
Talk about... I mean, it's going to be an hour and a half podcast. I know that because it's two games to talk about.
The edit's going
to
be a bastard.
Jeez. We do so love the free form.
Yeah, there's no structure when I leave. But hey, you guys who pay nothing for this podcast, get your money's worth. Hey, thanks for listening.
Thanks to all the Patreons.
Yeah. I mean, they get their money's worth with bonus Patreon content, which you guys can record some of next week for everybody because we're not going to do it this week. Yeah, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Bye. You get what you pay for brings you.
Yeah, you do.
Cam and the Lundy Run brings you.
You guys trying to bait me about Hamish Watson, but me just singing his praises brings you.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
You didn't. Yeah, you talked him down. You said he's at his level.
He is.
The backhanded compliment.
Singing his praises would be saying he should come in for the Phoenix.
Nope, didn't say that.
Get him in quarantine. In fact, he doesn't even need to quarantine.
It's such a backhanded compliment.
He could play on Saturday.
Dave leaving me sitting outside his place for 10 minutes while I waited for him to check his phone brings you.